Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Velocity of Content. It is Friday, April 9th, 2021. Every week we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of publishing. And Rob Anise, PW Senior Writer, joins me today with his reporting and editorial analysis. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So the global pandemic has entered its second year, Andrew, and while there is hope for a way out in the form of vaccines, imagining the post-pandemic future for the book business is a riddle yet to be solved. And this week, PW participated in a webinar with Westchester Publishing Services that addressed this very question.
Yeah, so on Tuesday, PW put on a terrific webinar called Publishing Now 21, Looking Forward. And as you say, it was hosted by Westchester Publishing Services and Publishers Weekly. And on this webinar, industry insiders discussed the state of the book business, including the ways in which it has been changed by the pandemic and the outlook going forward. The panelists were Tom Chalmers, who's the managing director of Legend Times Group, Kathy Felgar, who is the publishing operations director at Princeton University Press, the great Dominique Rocca, who's the CEO and publisher of Sourcebooks, and Lorraine Shanley, who's the president of Market Partners International. And it was all moderated by my boss, PW editorial director, Jim Milliot. Now, you can read all about the highlights on the PW website right now. And of course, I'll give you a few notables today on the podcast, starting with the obvious question at the center of this webinar, which was, print unit sales were up, surprisingly robust in 2020, about 8%. And so far in 2021, unit sales are up even more, a whopping 26% so far this year. And the question, of course, is, are those strong sales going to continue, and what challenges may be lurking ahead?
And what did the panel suggest is driving the sales boom, Andrew?
Yeah, so it's something that we've noted in the numbers on this show over the last few months, and that's there's this huge bump in backlist sales in 2020. Virtually every publisher who released numbers has said that backlist sales were a major driver of revenue last year, and they continue to be so far this year. Chalmers, whose company publishes both trade and academic titles, called it an unprecedented shift. In 2020, Legend sales were 65% backlist and 35% frontlist, Chalmers said, which is a flip from previous years. And Princeton's Felgar said that frontlist titles were somewhat soft, while backlist titles had done quite well, and ebooks too, which were actually staying up. You know, they've been declining in past years. They rose in 2020, and they are staying up in 2021. And Dominique Rocca said that, you know, strong backlist sales have continued well into 2021, with backlist sales up 74% over 2020. And, you know, I don't think there's a mystery as to what's going on here. And you can probably guess the obvious factor that's sort of driving that backlist flip.
Yeah, I bet I can. And that's that we've gone virtual in every other area of our lives. And so the online market has to really be making a difference in publishing.
Exactly. You know, online commerce has always been a big and a growing part of the publishing market for many years. But this forced flip to online due to the pandemic has really juiced the online and digital sales channels. And for one, that's because people obviously had to use online sellers during the lockdowns. And they likely discovered that, hey, this isn't so bad. It's actually really convenient. I'm getting good prices, and they're bringing it right to my door, usually within a day or so. So what percentage of people who increased their online shopping behavior in 2020 are going to stay in that space once we get back to normal? And another factor is that online turns out to be really good at driving backlist sales. You know, during the webinar, Rocca attributed slower frontlist sales to discoverability issues with respect to the online market. And she suggested that American readers may be taking less risks with new authors and new books. And that may well be what the numbers show. But I can tell you this too anecdotally, and that's that there are just tons of great books out there that Americans over the years have just not had time to read, that they've always wanted to, that maybe they've made a note of, but haven't had time to pick up. And now that they have a little more time to, you know, surf the web, that they're online a little more, they're finding those books. And because those backlist books are priced more cheaply, they're picking them up. So, you know, you're looking for a new book to read, and you can buy a new book that you want to read for $25, or you can buy one of the 50 books that you've been thinking about reading for $7.99 a pop. Maybe it's an author or title that just sort of popped up in your social media feed or one of your friends let you know about. And at that price, hey, maybe you'll buy two. right? Maybe you'll buy three. Maybe you've joined a book club. You know, that's another part of this too, is the online book club participation has really surged in the last year. And book clubs often choose backlist titles. And now I'm not talking about Reese Witherspoon's book club. I'm talking about the book club that you started with your friends, right? You know, my wife is actually in three book clubs right now, and you know, they're reading a ton of backlist books. She's reading an old Murakami book right now, and she's loving it. So, you know, to that end, there was a really great discussion during the webinar, I should say, about the need to rethink marketing efforts in publishing going forward. One of the things that was discussed is that virtual events, which were really popular last year when stores were closed, well, there's a certain Zoom fatigue that seems to be setting in right now. And Rocca acknowledged that, you know, virtual events are just not translating to sales very well anymore. So, you know, what I would stress is that this all sort of makes the case too for indie bookstores and libraries, at least in terms of marketing, right? Especially in terms of marketing, because, you know, regardless of the actual sales that these institutions bring in, which is a good chunk of sales and obviously important revenue, but, you know, having a bookstore and a library in your community, they're just critical footholds, you know, face-to-face places you can walk into and look at books with the covers out. These are critical footholds in our communities in terms of marketing, you know, especially to the industry's best customers, which are power readers.
And you've reported for PW on the unexpected resilience in the supply chain for the book business, Andrew, but I understand the panelists are concerned that supply chain may be feeling strained. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So perhaps the most interesting part of the discussion for me is that while I think the supply chain has shown incredible resilience in delivering significant growth during a pandemic, a very uncertain time, it in fact has been kind of bumpy, and the strain on the supply chain has been real. And, you know, a big part of that comes from an issue that existed well before the pandemic, and that's the limited printing capacity we have here in the U.S., an issue that's been exacerbated by a glut of titles that were delayed from the spring of 2020 when the pandemic first hit. There's been more than 500 such titles that we're tracking here at PW, books that were pushed into 2021. So bookstores would be open, right? Something that also I would point out is going to make the issue of frontlist discoverability that Dominic Rocca mentioned even more problematic when you have all of these titles competing for consumer attention. Now, I found it very refreshing to hear Dominic Rocca say that when it comes to the printing situation, the industry is sort of paying for some short-sightedness that it undertook in the past. And she said that she really hoped that in the future, we would start to see more investment in printing businesses. Now, I agree with that, and I'm not sure that short-sightedness is exactly the right word, though. I think there was just some flat-out bad bets, some bad assumptions that were made during the early days of digital, you know, back when print was actually in decline, and there was all this talk about, is print dead? Is print going to bounce back? But I don't think this was ever about the format. I think we know now this was never really about the format. In fact, print has turned out to be very popular and sustainable reading technology. People like to read print books. So I think it was more about the lack of suitable e-commerce solutions back in the early days of digital solutions outside of Amazon. So definitely some challenges for the supply chain going forward. But the good news is, looking ahead, 2021 is actually projected to be another good year for the book business. You know, a recent report from McKinsey said that online reading and purchasing is going to continue at very strong rates. And Lorraine Shanley pointed out that everything that she sees predicts that the book market is going to have another strong year in 2021. Now, whether the trends of the past year and the hot start to 2021 are going to be sustainable over the long term and in the years to come, different question. And the jury is very much still out. And I think one of the things that this panel made clear is that sales in the longer term, like 2025 and beyond, are really going to depend on some key decisions and actions that are going to have to be made right now.
And this week is National Library Week, Andrew, and as it does every year on that occasion, the American Library Association has released its top 10 most challenged books of the year list.
Yeah, and for a third year in a row, Alex Gino's George has topped the American Library Association's list of the most challenged books in American libraries. And as you point out, the ALA's most challenged book list is released every year in conjunction with National Library Week, which runs from April 4 to 10 this year. And it tracks attempts to ban or restrict books across the United States, and it raises awareness of censorship efforts in our libraries and schools. So what did this year's numbers show? Well, in 2020, there were more than 273 books that were challenged or banned in libraries. This according to the report. Now, I should note that number is actually down, and down quite a bit from the 377 books that were challenged in 2019. But that's for an obvious reason, right? Many libraries and schools were closed or moved online for much of the year because of the pandemic. ALA's report also points out that, you know, demands to remove books largely focused on areas that have become politically hot over the years. Especially in the last year, we've seen a bump in banned books addressing racism and racial justice, or in those that share the stories of Black and Indigenous or people of color. Those challenges grew in number, which is disturbing. And at the same time, books addressing themes and issues of concerns for the LGBTQIA plus community also continue to dominate the list, a trend we've really seen in recent years. Those books have been increasingly challenged, and that's also very disturbing. So you can check out the whole banned books list on the PW site, and you can also read more about National Library Week there. But I just want to say one more thing about this year's challenged books list, because this year's list drops at a time where, you know, the Dr. Seuss story was big and cancel culture is being bandied about. But look, you know, the six books that the Seuss Estate, you know, banned last year, they may very well, some of those books may hit the list next year for libraries. Who knows? But I don't think so, because I wonder, most of those titles were actually not circulating, right? They were older titles. They weren't very popular titles. But the point I want to make is this, you know, there are some on the right who love to talk about being politically canceled for conservative views, and that this list should be a reminder of what cancel culture really looks like, right? It's school boards and parent groups demanding that libraries take books off the shelf because the content of those books might offend them. And this happens every day in our communities, and it doesn't make Newsmax, or it doesn't make Fox News, or it doesn't make the newspapers of any kind, but it happens every single day. So I just want to shout out ALA for continuing to collect these statistics and to take this occasion every year to remind us that freedom to publish and freedom to read should be sacred in this country.
Indeed, and the State of America's Libraries report is out as well this week.
Yeah, and as you would expect, the annual State of America's Libraries is a special report this year that focuses on the challenges from COVID-19. And like many institutions, including the publishing industry, libraries were forced to close their doors, but they worked hard to adapt to a new way of doing business. And the report notes that the closures did not prevent library workers and libraries from still serving their communities. And in fact, it spurred a lot of libraries to find new ways to serve patrons and students. You know, while most libraries were closed for visits for at least part of the year, many are still closed. Libraries accelerated or adopted policies that let users access resources remotely, right? Or from a safe social distance, whether that was utilizing their outdoor space or, you know, spacing tables in the library when they were open. There was a big bump in digital library cards, for example, and curbside pickups were a big deal. And ebook lending surged in the last year, up 40% in 2020 over 2019. And of course, libraries played a hugely significant role in bridging a digital divide that has only become more apparent during the pandemic. Now, I'll note too that this report drops just as the Biden administration released its multi-trillion-dollar infrastructure bill. We reported on this at the end of last week here at PW. And ALA officials were actually disappointed because libraries were not specifically included in the first draft of that bill. But I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say that libraries absolutely will be part of any infrastructure bill going forward. And if you need to know why, you can check out this report that's available on the ALA website, the State of America's Libraries 2020. And it just really makes the point that public libraries are essential infrastructure. I think we all know that. If we're listening to this podcast, we probably have a good sense of how important libraries are. But I think we need to make sure that the White House and our local legislators do as well, because, you know, we've talked a lot about what the post-pandemic world might look like. I think it's fair to say libraries are going to be a very important part of getting back to and sustaining normal life for tens of millions of Americans.
Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on the next podcast from CCC, building a publishing business and a brand aiming at an audience of women consumers with empowering stories and fresh ideas about personal development. That all sounds so 2021. But for Judy Piatkis, the opening chapter of her new memoir is set in 1970s London. To be published next week, ahead of her time, recalls an era in British publishing as far behind us as miners' strikes and sold-out shows by Led Zeppelin. Yet the key themes from the personal and working life of Judy Piatkis still resonate.
When we started out, all the readers were people who enjoyed easy, escapist fiction. It didn't demand too much. And then I realized that if I wanted to be taken seriously as a publisher, I needed to think about publishing nonfiction as well. And I didn't know a great deal. I was a young woman in my early 30s. I had one child with disabilities, another child on the way when I started the company. Then I had a third child. So we began to do books on subjects that I was familiar with, cooking, parenting. And we also began to explore the area of alternative health, because women were beginning to talk about it. If they went to their doctors and the doctors didn't have an answer which helped them resolve their problems, they were beginning to turn to aromatherapy, reflexology, tai chi, shiatsu, all those things.
Ahead of her time, next on this CCC podcast. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. You can subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening. Join us again soon for another Velocity of Content podcast from CCC.